Thank you. I was wondering if it came to a fight, if there was enough people on the platform, to win difficulties with. But it looks like there's going to be more people here, so
Yeah,
that's great.
around 10.
Welcome to you all. We're here until 10:45.
9:30, 10:30, 10:45, yeah.
Okay, so we have a long time together then. Okay, we'll have to stand up every 10 minutes or something and get the circulation going. The wooden benches can cut that off after a while.
Yeah, right.
I realize that I've been away from Alberta for a couple of years because when I walked into the auditorium and saw that all these benches were gone and the fancy seats, I thought, "Whoa, what's happening?"
Last year.
Oh, last year.
Last year.
Okay, well that explains that I wasn't here last year. My name is James Asselford. I'm currently the Executive Director of ADRA Canada. We are in the little village of Newcastle, which is about an hour and a half east of Toronto. We've been there for the last, 2013, 3 years now. Before that, we were in Oshawa, but we now moved to our own building. And those colleagues who we call the legacy colleagues, those who made the move, who were in the old building, they appreciate the new surroundings. And those who have joined us since, of course, think this is the way it's supposed to be. So, this time we're looking at disaster preparedness. And this is when we all preach to each other or preach to ourselves, because I guarantee that just about every one of us is not ready for a disaster. You get the flashlight out of the closet and you tap it, and nothing happens because the battery's corroded 3 years ago. And you go down to your emergency store of food and nothing's there. Now, what we're doing today is an actual course presentation that was prepared by the Division General Conference, something called the IICM. Maybe you've been talking about it, Dr. Mayellen? Okay, excellent. So the one for today, I severely edited. So I take responsibility for all the messing up, but I obviously wanted to give it a flavor from ADRA Canada. At some point, maybe when we get near the end of this presentation, we'll explore some of the challenges we face in Canada as we look at how we relate in the church to the different agencies and ministries and formulations that we have. It's an ongoing conversation around the world. North America has struggled with it. In our division, the only ADRA office in the whole division is ADRA Canada. There's no other ADRA office. It's a little strange. You'll immediately ask me, but what about ADRA International? Well, it's in the US, but it's a world body. So really comes under the General Conference in some way, not under the division. So this is something still a conversation pending. North American division has tackled one of the issues that they had, which was that in the US they had three separate agencies that were working together or competing, choose your verb, for that leadership role, and that was Hope for Humanity, Adventist Community Services, or ACS, and ADRA International. So what the division did was that they merged Hope for Humanity and ACS into one body called ACS. They just took the name of Adventist Community Services. So that's helping to clarify what they do in the US. In Canada, we still have not come to grips with the administrative approach. We have always used, at least there has been a general understanding in the years gone by, that in the term ACS, the word Adventist was an adjective. In other words, community services that were Adventist. And it was sort of seen more as a departmental approach by conferences which may or may not pick it up, which churches which may or may not use that. But there is no ACS in Canada in terms of a legal entity. That may change, I don't know. There's a conversation going on in our union under something called Adventist Ministries of Compassion, AMC. Actually, AMCC, Adventist Ministries of Compassion Canada. And they're looking at all of the ministries in Canada that relate to serving our communities. And those ministries include the deaf and the blind and community services and so forth. So they're trying to see how we can put all of these into one unified way of working. That conversation has been going on for some time. It's nowhere near finished, so I have nothing to report to you except that it's happening. Now, you may want to know something about how I, those of you who don't know me, how I present, and let me tell you that I operate best when I'm responding to questions. So feel free to interrupt. I'll happily tell you if I don't know the answer, but if I do know the answer, we'll scratch where it itches, and so feel free to interrupt as we proceed.
I was going to say one thing, the ministries of the church can be involved with the Adra, the ministries.
Yes.
In other words.
Yes, absolutely. Where we are at the moment in this, and it's a bit of a... It's been a bit of a dialogue for the last several years, but the decision taken in the last year or so by the union and the conferences was that community projects would be the responsibility of the conferences and mission. But the conferences and mission, you know, we've got six conferences and one mission, Newfoundland, the mission. They would invite ADRA Canada's participation in disaster response. And we have also had some dialogue about, well, how about some shared projects? Because many conferences, like Alberta, have, shall we say, projects of national importance, like the Mamawi project. I mean, that's huge. That's a Canadian big deal, reaching native peoples. And ADRA Canada has been involved with that in the past, with providing a breakfast meal for the students so that they had a better chance of actually learning something, like having a breakfast and getting started in school, since that was not typically a part of the communities that they came from. But that conversation is still ongoing. But yes, ADRA Canada welcomes a partnership with all areas of the church, but always in a conversation with the conference, so that we're doing everything transparently. Okay, so moving along, as we consider Christ's ministry to his followers and the public of his day, we realize it's our mission to care for those around us. There's a book that you can get at the ABC online. I don't know if it's available in the stores. It's called Do Justice. And it was published by the Signs Publishing House. That's the Adventist Publishing House in Australia. Edited by the editor of the Signs, again in Australia. And this collection of essays written by senior church leaders, theologians, preachers, even one or two ADRA personnel. And it talks about the call to biblical justice. And this series of essays includes several that point out that the Adventist Church in its beginnings in the 19th century was very engaged in social issues, in poverty, justice, the burning issues of the day. not uniformly successfully, Sometimes Ellen White and her husband were sort of lone voices calling for action, and other times the members and the leadership got involved and really engaged. The authors point out in their essays that as we got into the 20th century, much of that concern seemed to go onto the back burner. And instead we focused as a people on theological, doctrinal points and other doctrinal points, I should say, and sort of left behind these issues. In fact, some of our church leaders wrote very harsh things about engaging with the public and said, you know, that was not our role. Somebody else should be doing that, not us. We should be presenting our distinctive truths. But this, I think we're now getting a change of attitude again, as you'll see if you get a copy of that book. We have it in our office, so you can get it from us, but you can, as I say, you can go to the ABC online and you can order a copy. I think it's about $15, that's probably US though, so that means about $88 Canadian.
You said it was published by Science Australia, but what does it have as the author?
So it's edited by Joanna Darby, but the first name is... Oh, what's his name?
My last name is Darby.
Yeah, but that's not the it'll come to me.
All right.
You know, as we get some of our senior church leaders, our senior pastors in the denomination who are coming back and calling for us to be engaged as a people, saying that this is part of Christ's mission. Christ was engaged with people. He was engaged with their needs.
I was quite surprised the pastors went out to Portland Merge.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first I've ever heard of them doing something outside.
Yes.
Their space.
A tremendous example. We have a special moment, I believe, here in the Alberta Conference, like we have not had in a long time, where people are engaging, church members, church leaders, are engaging with the public in a tremendous way. Now, we saw that back with the Calgary floods, High River. Those of you who were at camp meeting then, we had buses going down to High River involved in sorting goods on the First Nations Reserve and cleaning up in the town of High River. So that was I don't know, for me that was kind of a big thing that we worked together, ADRA Canada, the Alberta Conference. Yes. Yes, good. And now we have a worse thing. The Alberta wildfires, the Fort McMurray fires, have now officially become the most expensive disaster in Canada, in our history. Apparently it was nip and tuck for a while, but as the numbers are being crunched by the financial people, the insurance companies, the government, the number has now risen. So that now this is the most expensive disaster in Canadian history. And to see how we are coming together, this is not meant to be a promotional thing, but obviously it's all in our minds right now. I mean, this is phenomenal. Were you there last night when Jason Kenney
yes.
spoke?
Yes,
yes. I mean, were you... The one sentence stuck out because it sort of echoes something I've been saying. He said, you people are not very big numerically. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yes,
we're not. In Canada, we're what, 65,000 members in a population of 35 million people.
I guess he should know.
We're numerically, we're not even a blip. But he says, you stand tall because of who you are and what you do. And then he made the point, he said it much stronger than I dared to say it. He said, all Canada has to go through you people for the donation center in Edmonton. And, you know, talk about God placing us in a very central place. This is phenomenal. And this came as a result of conversations. My colleague Anita, who is our emergency management director, she was... in Alberta almost the whole time since the wildfires for the first 37 days. She was a bit like Nehemiah, you know, she neither washed her clothes nor laid down to sleep. She was just here the whole time, engaging with the authorities in Edmonton, the provincial authorities, the municipality of Wood Buffalo. We had some consultation from our colleagues in the U.S., the ACS people. We had one or two of those folks come up to lend their expertise from the perspective of what they do in the U.S., where they are have a much more vigorous program of responding to disasters using warehousing as part of FEMA, which is the Federal Emergency Management Agency. It's the American agency that responds to disasters. Then we got into this conversation, and the government called people together, that's the provincial government, and they said, who's going to handle this? We've got to have one group, one agency that processes all the donations. And no one put their hands up.
Oh.
Until Anita did.
So your response truck went up first to Fort McMurray, and then this was decided?
Yes. Now, we had already been responding because of the Edmonton churches, those of you from Edmonton, Edmonton South, you know, a marvelous opportunity. The churches were full of boxes of diapers, and people were hosting people in homes, and all kinds of good things were happening in the first few days. But meanwhile, this conversation was going on with the government authorities. So the government turned to us and said, okay, well, you're it then. And they didn't really know what to do, and we had to talk to lots of their bureaucrats to craft the contract, the project document, and discussions about the budget, what was going to be covered and paid for by the provincial government. And finally, just hours away before it was signed, the budget was approved, and it was something like $1.1 million. That the province is going to give to AdraCanada to care for the costs associated with this activity. And at the time, I didn't know. Those of you who saw my CBC television interview, I made a big error, but I made it not knowing. I said that that grant was also to cover the cost of the warehouse. No, it wasn't. The warehouse is being funded separately by the provincial government. So the grant that they gave us was for other costs, the actual provision of the of our staff, the volunteers, the trucking, whatever, so many things. So the actual amount that the government is providing to us is probably, I don't know, maybe double, because they arranged with the landlord to give us that brand new warehouse in the northwest of Edmonton.
Is it just before St. Overture?
Yeah, it's on 170th Street. Well, it's just off it, but you got 170th Street, which goes straight into St. Albert.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's just 5 minutes from St. Albert, or less.
Mm-hmm. My son lives down that way, so I'm familiar with 170th, because St. Albert Trail is before 170th.
yeah. So, an amazing thing for us to be the body, the only body that is receiving the donations from all across Canada, but most particularly from Edmonton, of course, and sorting them, packing, repacking, getting things organized, and then sending them up to Fort McMurray for the distribution centers, which are giving them to the people. And one of the distribution centers is the Adventist Church in Fort McMurray. And as you said, we have a parallel operation, or an additional operation, that's happening at the church in Fort McMurray, where pastors from the conference have gone up to provide counseling services. And
they've been even asking other people that want to be involved with that as well to go.
I spoke with a resident from Fort McMurray Church last night. And we've been out there several times because of my husband's work, and to their church. And this lady, they've been in Fort McMurray for 30 to 40 years. They're old timers there. But she was telling me that the fire was coming and they were told to get out, and they went out the front door, or the back door, as the fire was coming in the front door. Wow. And I said, did you have a suitcase or anything? She said, no. She says, I said, well, did you get your purse? All she had was her purse,
her and her husband, and the clothes on the backs.
Well, I think one thing that that highlights, and good to mention in the context of this course, is do you have what we used to call in Africa a QRK, a quick run kit? You know, if you had 30 seconds to get out of your house, what would you grab? You know, do you have that in your mind? Now, I know for myself, I would run downstairs and grab the little fireproof safe that has all of my documents and passports and birth certificates and, you know, all those things. I would grab that because that really is my life. The rest I can replace. That, you know, is all the information about my family and everything and all the legalities. So that's one thing I'd grab. Although fireproof safety, it might survive, but who knows, it might not. So that's one thing. For other people, there are certain pictures they would want to have. You know, family pictures, whatever. Important, yes.
There's books dedicated to that. In
yes.
The store. The important things to have right on hand.
Mm-hmm.
In your car, in your home, in your front hall closet. And I wondered as a church, to be able to give something like that to the communities on, you know, kind of boning up what to do, what the city does, and I guess for us, what Andrew does.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly what you can do in your home. And it was kind of interesting that it divided into two sections. You know, your QR code run, and also how to prepare to stay and wait something out that was more appropriate to be what you need to have on hand, as in water, blah blah blah.
Mm-hmm. ADRA Canada put out a booklet a few years ago called "Are You Ready?" We distributed this far and wide across Canada. We don't have any supplies left, but I'm just making a note.
What color was it?
Yellowish.
Orangish?
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, we still have some of them, I think, around the...
Okay.
Are you ready?
At least, you know, in today's climate, I made a note to myself to make sure if it's not there already, to put it up online on our website, because, you know, then you can access it, print it off if you want, or check it online. Because, yes, we did a fair bit of work some years ago in preparing that booklet, and we distributed it. And so it's a good resource. Okay. The course asks us to consider Christ's ministry to his followers and the public of his day. We realize it's our mission to care for those around us. Part of caring for others is preparedness. And so this course is for that, for anyone who's concerned about being ready and sharing this, whether you're part of an ACS group, a church community group, whether you're involved with ADRA or anything else, the information is still useful. Preparedness is one of those things that nobody... Everyone believes in, but no one really does.
Well, even for the churches, I mean, they should be, because, you know, you never know if somebody could come along and put a bomb right on the church.
Yes. And the thing is, we have proverbs like, you know, a stitch in time saves nine, but how many of us do that stitch to save the nine? When we ask money from or donations to fund disaster preparedness activities, we have a hard time. But when you hear of Typhoon Haiyan in the Philippines, you send in a donation. We would have done a lot better if we'd had those donations, a quarter of those donations, beforehand to help the communities to prepare for disasters. Because often the preparedness and the disaster risk reduction is cheap. For instance, when I lived in the Philippines, we had a disaster response project. People had their roofs blown off. So we helped them with materials to put new roofs on, simple things. But one thing we did was we gave them four brackets, little iron, right angle pieces of iron, worth $3-4, to strap the roof materials onto the posts. And just those simple iron brackets would prevent the roof blowing off in a strong wind. Now, a super typhoon, nothing will take it because the whole place is going to go. But at least, you know, for the usual sort of storms. So preparedness is often cheap. Replacing the roof, that's much more expensive. So when we come to look at this topic of disaster preparedness, we see that we come back, obviously, to our biblical foundations, because everything that we do, we came together as a people largely because of biblical convictions. The soon return of Jesus Christ, the second advent, the Sabbath, the prophecies, all these things that point to the fact that the world is coming to an end soon, and this has fired our imagination as a denomination for the last 150 years. And we, of course, have the sermons by Jesus where he talks at the end of his ministry, when he started to paint pictures of what was going to happen. And he did it in a kind of a double talk. You know, he talked about what was going to happen in the next few years as the Romans came in to put down the rebellion in Judea and ultimately destroy Jerusalem and remove the people of Israel from any sort of political role at all, and at the same time giving hints of what was to happen at the end of time. And so he talks about nation rising against nation, kingdom against kingdom, famines, pestilences, earthquakes, all these things happening in different places. Disasters would become a very important part of the end time. And when I talk to people anywhere, whether it's in the church or outside the church, I hear this comment of, wow, it just seemed to be getting worse. If I talk to my neighbors in Ontario, it just seems to be getting worse.
Are people not ready yet?
So there's a... Now, whether things are actually getting worse or just that we are increasingly aware of it through media is kind of an academic conversation, because it doesn't matter. We are more aware of the fact that the world is coming adrift. Of course, those of us who are historians will point to the blasphemy of the Second World War, the First World War, the tragedies of the genocide in Armenia, and the great influenza epidemic of 1919, and all these things. So it's not terribly new, but nonetheless, we're aware of it, you know, especially through social media, instantly. You know, we had pictures coming out of Fort Mac as it happened. Never before.
You don't get to know everything unless you go on,
yeah,
YouTube. You know, it's interesting, Jesus did say in Matthew 24, when you see these things happen, and we see it, right, as they're happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the powerful use of that word. Mm-hmm. And then as one of the speakers this camp meeting mentioned, that after Matthew 24, we get Matthew 25. And then Jesus talks about what I call the great examination. And most of us have been through school of some sort or other, and no matter how much time you spend in school, you always face these exams. I personally never enjoyed them. I never expect to enjoy them in the future. But there is one exam that we're all going to face, whether you are in any sort of educational institution or not, and that's the final exam by the Lord of the universe. And when he has this exam, as good Adventists, we might expect there to be a lot of detailed questions about the 28 doctrines and whether we have all the right proof texts for tithing and the Sabbath and the King of the North and anything else that, you know, is of interest to us from our study of the Bible prophecies. There's no mention of that. Instead, all Jesus is asking is, how did you treat your neighbor? You know, and he says that the people who are going to pass the exam are those who, and he uses the culture of the day, the widows, the fatherless, you know, you fed those who were hungry, you gave water to those who were thirsty, you showed compassion. So this final exam is something that's also catching us as a people. It riveted our pioneers in the Adventist Church, and I think it's starting to catch us again as a Seventh-day Adventist people. That we can't just sit. Have you ever heard of Simon Stylites? Now, he was a mystic, a Christian disciple of, I don't know, maybe the 3rd century AD or something. And he was so concerned about not getting involved with the wicked and corrupt world that he withdrew himself. Finally, he put a pillar, a stylite, up, and he with a little platform, and he sat up there on that platform on the top of a pole. And I think he had a rope, he would lower it down occasionally, and some people who were impressed with him would come and put food and he'd pull it up. He was totally isolated from the world so that he could be pure up there, not corrupted by the world. But he obviously hadn't studied Matthew 25 at all, because he wasn't helping anybody.
He gives us the answers to the exam before we play it.
Yes. So the expression of our church that in North America and in some other countries of the world, and Dr. Mayellen may talk about some of these things, the Adventist Community Services, whether it is a formally recognized institution, like in the U.S., it's a legal entity, or whether it is just a sort of departmental approach, or whether it's part of the ADRA network, which is present in, well, some say 134 countries of the world. All of these formulations of the church are drawing us to serve our Lord Jesus Christ and helping those who are hurting. There's a very famous passage in Ministry of Healing. You may have encountered this before. It's well worth repeating if you've seen it before, and if you haven't, it's an incredibly powerful statement. Here Ellen White wrote, "Christ's method alone will give true success in reaching the people." All right, well, we're interested. We constantly hear about evangelism. Every camp meeting there's an evangelism offering, and this is good. Our church has grown from a few farmers in northern New England to a worldwide body with millions of members. In fact, I think the information was released just a few weeks ago from the General Conference. Membership is now officially over 19 million members. This despite the fact that they have cut many that they found were no longer, you know, alive or present or whatever. So there's been a lot of careful membership audit around the world. But still, the number is now up to 19 million. Won't be long before it's 20 million.
In North America?
No, the world.
The world.
Yes. In North America, it's 1 million and something. I don't know the current number.
It's interesting. In Wikipedia, they say that we are the, I forget now, 12th largest religious body, it said.
Yes.
We're it's less than 20 anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But the 6th largest, most international.
Mm-hmm. There
religious
are
body, not Christian.
Yes.
Religious body.
There are several lists of the biggest religious groupings, and we appear in most of those lists, depending on whether it's, you know, how many countries you're in, how many languages that your members speak, how many languages you publish in, actual numbers in different countries, whatever. There are several lists, and we appear in most of those. So, reaching the people is of interest to us, so then Christ's method has surely got to be interesting to us. So, what is that method? And here she says, the Savior, Jesus, mingled with people as one who desired their good. He showed his sympathy for them. He ministered to their needs and won their confidence. Then he told them, follow me. So the order, she says, isn't terribly important. And dare I say it with great respect and humility to my ministerial colleagues, sometimes we do it the other way around. You know, we rush out and say, follow Jesus, follow Jesus. And a lot of people respond to that for a few weeks. And then when the excitement is gone and the tent is taken down, you know, then a lot of those people leave. But she says the way in which to share the gospel is to first of all focus on people and their needs. There is need of coming close to the people by personal effort. If less time were given to sermonizing, ouch, and more time were spent in personal ministry, greater results would be seen. And then she says, the poor are to be relieved, the sick cared for, the sorrowing and bereaved comforted, the ignorant instructed, the inexperienced counseled. We are to weep with those that weep and rejoice with those that rejoice. And we've just been talking about Fort McMurray, how, you know, we had groups of pastors going up providing counseling services. And it's not limited to the professionals. I was just up in Fort Mac, as you may know, on Monday, and I was talking with our project person there, Jack, and he was telling me that every Sabbath afternoon now, the church members, they have a potluck, and in the afternoon they go out to their community and they hand out water, bottled water, and flyers and things like that. And he said, we spend a lot of our time just talking with people. He said, I knocked on the door of one old lady. She said, no, I don't need anything. And then she said, actually, if you don't mind, my husband is sort of bedridden. I have a hard time getting things upstairs. Do you mind carrying something upstairs for me? So he did. And then she opened up and told, you know, her story and shared and everything. She said, you're from a church? Where is it? That's the end of our street. There's a church there? She said, I've lived here for 13 years. I didn't know there was a church at the end of my street. Now, it's pretty obvious because we see it when we drive by. But here was, you know, this lady who had no idea of our existence. I guarantee you that if we'd pass by with a, you know, a Daniel and Revelation leaflet, she might not have responded. But here someone knocked on her door, offered her bottled water, still concerns about drinking water in Fort Mac, gave her a leaflet about things, and then she just poured out her heart. So now she trusts someone. Someone's come to her house with no agenda but just to be there. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Never mind the other communities who don't even drive by the church. So now here, hundreds of people in Fort McMurray. I mean, the disaster's terrible. I don't want it repeated. But on the bright side, those church members who are responding to that, the community is saying, okay, you know, this is wonderful. It's amazing. Because we're crying right now. Pastor Guzman was saying how many people he's met in the parking lot. He hardly talks to them for 5 minutes and they're crying as they start to relate. You know, they've lost their house, they lost the pictures, maybe they lost the pet, they lost so many things, and they don't know how to cope now. And here they're finding someone who's willing to listen. So we are to weep with those that weep, Ellen White says, ministering to their needs. This is the way, she says, that we can do evangelism. Now, Chris over there at It Is Written Canada, I'm 100% behind him. He's doing a marvelous job, and his team, the evangelists we have, our pastors who do the services, we need those, no question. But they're kind of wasted if we aren't making contact with people and addressing their real and their felt needs. The ministry of ADRA around the world precisely is doing this, taking care of sick people, poor people, addressing the needs. Our current projects revolve around responding to the crisis, the Syrian refugees, helping mothers and children to have a better life, you know, mothers being taught how to feed nutritious food to their children so the children have a chance in the first 1,000 days to mature. And so all these things ADRA is doing around the world, precisely touching people's lives. And was it a year ago or something? I was in Damascus in Syria. And in Syria, as far as I know, we don't have a single Seventh-day Adventist. No Adventist church, anything. I don't think there are any more. But if there is one, praise God. I'm not trying to, you know, play that down. But obviously Christianity is severely frowned upon. There's a lot of antipathy towards Christianity in Syria. But now we have an ADRA Syria office. And I was in Damascus and I met with ministers of the government. Top people in the foreign ministry. and with the Syrian Arab Red Crescent and all these things. Now, these people are not stupid. They know that Hadras is part of, you know, this Adventist worldwide thing. So they're not blind to who we are, but they accept in some way that allows them to process in their minds that they can engage with ADRA, because ADRA is there, is concerned about them and their needs. Yes, sorry, I ignored you for already 3 minutes behind you.
I think most people have a real problem of shutting up. We don't listen.
Yeah.
And that is a big problem. People would pour out their heart more if we would just zip it and listen.
Mm-hmm. And Davey, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to add to that. And sometimes we listen only so far, and then we tell them what we think they need.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just listening and just letting them talk.
And that's so important. We had, in the early days of ADRA, we had an ADRA leader in the South Pacific. I don't know if it was in Solomon Islands, somewhere like that. And he came to this community, and you know, the pigs were running around, the children were sitting in the mud puddles. Everyone was gaunt and haggard. It was so obvious to him what needed to happen in this village. You know, they needed education, nutrition, water, sanitation. It was very obvious. So he sat down with the people and he said, "Now what do you need?" And he already had filled in the list, so to speak. And the people said, "What we need is a big hut for the elders to sit in so that they can run our village." And he thought, "That's the last thing you need. You know, this fancy place for the elders? Forget it." But he was wise enough to listen, as you say. To listen and to pay attention to what they were saying. Fortunately, he happened to have some money that he had discretion over, so he helped them to build this big hut for the elders to sit in. And so they inaugurated this thing, the elders came, they sat down in a circle, and they said, "Now we need to address education and health and sanitation." But they couldn't talk or think because they didn't have the elders' hut. So in their society, you know, that's the way they process things. So how important it is to listen, because people, you know, they have their ways of doing things. Sometimes it doesn't fit what we think.
Because we keep talking.
Yes.
They aren't going to let loose and tell you what they really need.
Yeah. So when we're responding to disaster and preparing for disaster, we have to listen to the communities. And from my perspective, this is one thing, frankly, that ADRA does professionally. When we go into a community or communities, the first thing that we do is what we call a needs analysis or needs survey. We go around and ask, what is the situation? What do you need? What are the gaps? Before we rush in and start drilling wells, we better find out what you actually need. Then we can talk with you about, well, what about if we helped you with, you know, this or that and partnered in this process? Okay, so why do churches need to be ready? I'm sure we can think of all the right answers. Every time we have a disaster, we find from the clergy that they're overwhelmed. I'm sure we can look to any recent disaster, including Fort Mac, and find out that people were just struggling to survive day by day. But churches, where we come from, whether it is small or large, we are able to offer some resources to the community. I was just thrilled in the first few days after Fort Mac. Someone sent me a picture from Edmonton South Church, and the pews were filled with boxes of diapers and clothes and food and something. And I thought, hallelujah, what a wonderful picture of a church building. Now, I like things neat and orderly, and there's nothing that would have impressed me than a picture of a polished pew and a nice cushion and everything. But in the context of the disaster, I can just imagine. You know, Jesus went into the temple and he sent all those money changers out. But I don't think he would have come into Edmonton South Church. I think he would have been helping to load the boxes, you know, and making sure that the church was offering resources and help. So we ought to think that through. Yes, we want our church to be reverent, but what does reverent mean? Reverence for God means caring for his people. And churches are often used as a source of coping during stressful times. It says distressful. Stressful. Distressful.
I didn't see anyway. The history of this. I was just thinking. I haven't even looked through this, but I said, one day you're going to have to give the history of your Andra. Here it is.
Okay. Very good. Even those segments of society, they don't care for Christianity. They don't care for the church. But when it comes to disaster, well, you know, I need counseling. Well, who can counsel? Well, I'll take your pastor if he'll counsel me. I won't go to him any other time. But, you know, one of the couples in Fort Mac, just heard this yesterday or the day before. They were talking. They said, we need counseling to help us process what's gone. And then they said, you know, we're getting married in the autumn. Would you be willing to do our marriage counseling? We understand that, you know, wow, that level of trust that suddenly come from a community that would have had nothing to do with that big white building on the corner there, and now saying, I'll come to you for marriage counseling. Okay, we can leave the beasts and the nuts for later, you know. There's a time and a place for Daniel 2 and our dietary funny things and whatever. But the first thing are these really big issues. And we can become integral. Now, all too often, churches are disconnected. But in Canada, we have a tradition of churches being connected. In the current Syrian refugee crisis, we're partnering with World Renew. World Renew is the agency of the Christian Reformed Church. The Christian Reformed people are engaged in sponsoring Syrian refugees. Adventists, not. So our response in Adra Canada is, well, as long as some Christian is doing it, we're going to, you know, steer people to them. They've got the expertise, they've got the thing built up. And so what we're doing with the Christian Reform people, with their agency called World Renew, we work with them in the Philippines and other places, so we have a good relationship. We've given them some funding. They're developing resources that will have both our names on it, World Renew, Adra Canada, so it'll be available to all of our congregations as well as to all of their congregations. So, you know, people are willing to accept, even from small, weird Christian groups, in times of distress. Okay, here's a very complicated picture of phases of disaster. We don't need to study this for an exam, but the main point, of course, is that there are phases of a disaster. The first thing that happens, of course, there's panic. There is immediate life-saving things that have to be done. People need shelter, food, water. Water especially, very quickly. Well, they need air if trapped in a mine. But these things, you know, very quickly need to be done. Then we have the phases where people now need to reconstruct their lives, put their lives back together. And sometimes we have the fact that people will run on adrenaline for a while. No, I'm okay. No, I'm an Albertan. You know, we redneck people are, we're tough. And we can get through it. But then the adrenaline fades off, and all of a sudden, well, actually, I'm not so tough after all. And I'm hurting, and I'm in pain, and I don't know what to do. And my kids are this, and my grandkids are the other. And I lost somebody, and I lost income, lost employment, whatever. So those phases are useful. Adventists typically are not very good at responding quickly. We are fairly good at responding in the long term, and we're streets ahead of many of the others in being there for the long haul. Now, we're trying in Adra Canada to mitigate that somewhat. We cooperate with a group out of Toronto called Global Medic. And they're very good at the fast response. You know, they have people on standby. They have these water purification tablets. They have water purification generators. And they have links with the fire and the police and whatever. And so often we fund their participation in our response. And they're in Haiti or Burma or Chile or Philippines or whatever very quickly in cooperation with us. Because we have people on the ground, we have church members, we have an adra on the ground, whatever, and they come in, do their thing. We're still scrambling, getting sorted. But then they've done their bit, and then we continue with our response. As someone said to me just the other day, there were so many agencies involved with Fort McMurray, and they've all gone already. And it's true, I was there a month ago, and outside one of the secondary schools, there were all kinds of groups camped there, handing out things and whatever. They've all gone. But address, the Adventist Church is still there. So the long haul is important, and people take note of that. So since 1874, the Adventist Church has provided emergency relief in times of disaster. Just looking at a brief history here then, as has been mentioned, 1879, the Dorcas Society was organized. We kind of laugh about this now, but you know, it was a credible thing in its day. And then in 1956, we had something called the SAWS, or the Seventh-day Adventist Welfare Service, that was formally recognized, especially following the outpouring of support that came from North America after the First and Second World Wars, when we sent disaster supplies to Europe, in particular to the war-ravaged areas. So 56 was the time to put that together. SAWS changed its name, but not its acronym. Originally, they were Seventh-day Adventist Welfare Service, but the word welfare sort of came into disrepute, so they changed that to Seventh-day Adventist World Service, which worked very nicely. Then in 1972, Adventist Community Services was formed. I assume that's the date it was legally registered in the U.S. That I don't know. And then in 1983-1984, there was this conversation, and by the way, there's someone here in our Edmonton warehouse who's working there as one of our staff right now in this response for Fort Mac. His father was one of the two people that were discussing a name change for SAWS, and they said we needed something that was a bit more inclusive, that covered both our emergency management disaster response phase and the fact that we're trying to tackle poverty at its roots with sort of the development activities. And they came up with ADRA, Adventist Development and Relief Agency. Never. And we have gone around saying, Veronica, please don't say that.
No, I'm not saying Development
and Relief Agency. Yes. Because we got the two things. Development, tackling poverty, and relief, responding to disasters. Yes.
Were those two people, John Howard and Lowell Cooper?
No. These were, this one individual is from South America. I was just trying to think who was before Ralph Watts. Was Drakenberg? Yes.
Yes.
So there is some of these people from more from South America. Some of this conversation came, but John Howard enters the picture very quickly, mm-hmm. because we have 83-84 is when we have ADRA registered in the United States, and they took the name of ADRA International. And around that time, if you've got a copy of John Howard's biography, you got anyone read his biography? Tut, tut, tut. Please call our office, send me an email, go online to adra.ca and order a copy of the John Howard biography. It's a thrilling read. I can say so because I didn't write it, although I started it. But Heather Gerbich, who's here on campus, you've seen Heather around perhaps with me. She'll be here to the end of the week. Heather is the authoress. Heather, I started this project, but it was just too much. I asked Heather, would you please take it on? She's done a brilliant job. She's captured John's story from boyhood in England, always wanting to be a mission person, getting involved in technical school, of all things. Not exactly the preparation for a missionary. You would have thought he needed to get a Bible picture roll and some Bible studies instead. But anyway, he came here to North America, went to school at Southern, came up to Canada, pastored in some of the churches in Ottawa and Quebec Ontario Conference, as it was called in those days. Then went out as a missionary to the Congo. and spent several years out there. And all this is the way that God worked in his life. Phenomenal.
Is he still alive?
He is.
Yes.
His son works.
Is here, yeah.
He is on the count.
Yep. Yeah, if you don't know who he is, you look for the person with the biggest bunch of keys hanging from the belt. And that's John Howard, number two. Yes. So it's his dad. And then John Howard came back to Alberta. Well, he didn't come back because I think this was new to him, but because he had been working in the East. So came to Alberta conference, and the president was Jim Wilson. And Jim said, you know, we need somebody to take care of these things, because Lowell Cooper had also got involved at that time with this milk project for India. So John got involved, and he started his conversations with the NGO council here in Alberta. And the thrilling story is traced in the book. And then you find out how he moved to Ontario to establish ADRA Canada. And that was in 1985, according to our documents, that was registered legally. And the exciting things that happened, how he realized that God was behind this ministry. Funding that was promised and disappeared by the brethren somehow was not made available. He walked into the government offices in Ottawa and they said, John, we think you need more money. And they gave him the money that was missing now from the church appropriations. And John realized, God wants this to happen whether we want it to happen or not. And so he was determined that this was going to succeed. And so the early stories and the successes of ADRA Canada. So the book is called Faith to Change the World. And you can order it from us. Call us up. I think it's about $25 or something. Mind you, if you give a nice donation, we'll probably give it to you for free. But a tremendous story. And so we have that explosion of ADRAs in 1985 and thereabouts, as various countries which had SOARs or some kind of program started their ADRAs. And ADRA Canada was extremely important in those early days. At one point, ADRA Canada was providing funding to 77 countries. Small grants, just little grants to let those ADRAs get started and to build up a sort of an expertise and the ability to do something, and then that gave them credibility so they could get involved in bigger things. Now, I'm in horror of trying to fund 77 countries. It would be insane. I would have to have 77 more staff minimum. But at the time, it was the right thing. And we Canadians contributed to the growth of ADRA around the world because we, through ADRA Canada, gave that funding which helped kickstart so many of the ADRA offices. So, despite the fact that I thought we would have too much time, we're actually running out of time. So, what is a disaster? Well, I think we would all know that. It's typically any sort of thing which destroys our world. And typically, we divide them into natural disasters or unnatural disasters and human instigated disasters. So, obviously, war, civil war, unrest of some sort, that is a disaster caused by people. The typhoon or the volcano or the wildfire is a natural occurrence, mind you. We might discover that someone was smoking up in Fort McMurray and started the fire by human means. I don't know. No one's been able to prove that yet, what it was.
Yeah, hearsay maybe, but somebody that did it on the other side of the other province, maybe come over to this province, who knows?
Yeah. So the types of disasters we face then are natural, technological, social, health, obviously international crises, the human action, civil war, civil unrest. Sometimes they're a mixture of many of these things. For instance, when we get some of the famines, like in Africa or whatever, often the famine may appear to be a natural phenomenon, but it's caused by human action of one way or another. The way this whole climate change debate that's going on. You know, how much are we contributing to the disasters around us? Maybe a lot more than we're wanting to admit.
Government policy.
Yes. Yeah.
Lack of policy. Mm-hmm.
And some of these things are such intricate and complicated. I was listening to a presentation on how we're trying to limit the CO2 emissions from our vehicle exhausts. But then they said the stockyards in the Midwest, you know, Chicago and so forth of the United States, they produce far more of these greenhouse gases from all of the, the manure and so forth associated with those gigantic stockyards. So, you know, if you're looking for another reason to be a vegetarian, some of us, we struggle, sort of flexitarian, whatever, but, there are solid green reasons for doing that. Yes. Now, quickly rushing through some of this, because I've kind of hijacked the conversation with my discussion about AdraCanada. You'll forgive me for that. The levels of disaster response, this is important for us because we do categorize roughly the way we respond to disasters. So if it's a small disaster, level one, let's call it, any disaster affecting 10 or fewer families, obviously at that point, that's not necessarily the point when we call in the big guns to help out, because local actors can manage. There's no need to call.
Just like in Pinoca, what was they had in Pinoca?
So a local community may be able to respond and handle, local church may be able to do something without calling in anybody else. But as it grows bigger, 11 to 50, 50 to 100 families, or finally anything that's significant, we have a different level of response. And sometimes it's very hard to tell. When I first heard the first news of the Fort Mac fire that I heard, I thought, probably won't amount to much. You know, it's just a big story about something that's not very big. You know, and then the next day, more story. Actually, the next day, many more stories. And soon we became aware that, And then finally, Anita said, I think I better go out west. And she was fully busy with her own program, but she dropped everything, well, except her laptop, and came out here to work with Lyle Notis at the conference office and the pastors who were responding in Edmonton and so forth. Okay, now talking about our personal preparedness plan, and I'm rushing very quickly here because we're supposed to wind up rapidly. Obviously, it's very helpful if we have a plan and we think about what we want to happen if there were a disaster. So it's good to think ahead. What would I do in a crisis? Where are the things I need? Do I have a list of those? Do I have backups of my important data? Increasingly in our world, data is an important thing, your documentation. And what is important to you? Of course, livelihood. And then having an emergency kit of some sort. Of course, we should all have a first aid kit in our homes, and I think all of us should have a fire extinguisher or whatever, just to take care of little emergencies like that. But that also helps for other things. So your personal emergency plan, you're considering escape routes, family communications, the insurance and vital records, which I've mentioned, other special needs, animals, if you have pets or livestock or anything like that who won't have anybody to care for them. And then where are you going to meet? How are you going to get in touch? So we believe that Seventh-day Adventist churches should have this, you know, part of their mental makeup.
They sifted through ashes to see if they could find any of their important things. Mm-hmm. Even their carbon.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So by planning, by encouraging others to plan, we'll help in the time of crisis. So steps to be taken. Obviously, it's good that we have an understanding of the facilities that we operate in, whether it's a church building or personal home. Choosing someone to be our advocate in the church is good. Completing an inventory response, an inventory of the things that we can use to respond with. and then working with ADRI Canada or the conference leadership for formulating plans for services following a disaster, and ensuring that we talk amongst ourselves. This is so key. One of the things I'm very proud about here in Alberta has been the high level of cooperation with ADRI Canada, the conference, support from the division, and the churches, not just Fort Mac, but the Edmonton churches in particular, and the pastors. All this working together has made a profound impact. And the CEO of Sherwood Park Care Home, Jerry Northam, was telling me the other day that he knows some very high-level people in the government, MLAs, and the mayor of Sherwood Park and others, and these have gone and spoken very loudly about the fact that Adventists can do it. I didn't know this. I just learned this this weekend. So there were voices in the Alberta government calling for trust in us, and we didn't even know it. So everything we do, you know, has this interlocking pattern. Okay, different phases of disaster, we've kind of touched on that, and having a disaster plan. I'm sorry, we have to wrap it up. So those are things that we can share this PowerPoint after. Oh, you have it? Okay, you don't have mine, you have the real. Okay, mine's the officially, you know, the new translation, the new King James. Yes, yes. Okay, so those things then are all sort of largely the same. I'm not touching them. So we'll just move on from there. And of course, we've talked about the clergy and the fact that we can have collaboration and other professionals in the church, medical personnel, social workers, and others. So we must not forget them, because they often have great amounts to contribute. And we, of course, are only part of the picture. Let us never think that we are the only answer. God is not limited to responding to human need by Seventh-day Adventists.
Were you involved during GC too?
Yes.
You were?
Yes. Okay, so I think we have to wrap up here. Yes.
I have a question. I attend a little church in Boyle.
Yes.
Which is right on the road to Fort McMurray, mm-hmm. which ended up with a lot of people from Fort McMurray. And the town had set up, you know, they had a distribution center there in town. They turned the arena into a distribution center kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we as a church, you know, we did help out. I went to whoever was doing all this stuff in charge and asked what is the biggest need.
Mm-hmm.
And we did try to provide it with our limited resources that we could, right? But the frustration I felt was, where's the church? You know, I felt a disconnect for our little congregation who were right in the midst of, because we have a lot of people from Fort McMurray who have lake properties around our town and who are familiar with our town and who headed there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they didn't really need a place to camp out in the sense of having a place, because they already had their campers, their trailers, and whatever set up there, or even their cabins. But they had nothing, because they left with nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But I just, you know, this initial response issue, because we had the same thing happen when Slave Lake, because we are kind of the northmost
mm-hmm.
church
mm-hmm.
near Slave Lake.
Yeah.
So,
you could have said, help!
Well, we only have 25 members, well, not even 25 members. So, but,
people can
you know,
to your church.
I guess what I want to know is how can, because we have willing people. Our people are really willing to do whatever is needed. How do we, as you know, who are right in it, sense that there is, you know, the church larger there to help us do something that we can do. Well, you guys did it anyway, but I just felt that we didn't have that.
I don't know.
She should report that to the conference.
Yes.
Okay. So you're meaning you're wondering where were the other administrators
coming out?
You know, like, did you communicate that to the churches? Or
no.
You could have maybe just sent out an
if there was some, if there was some way that we could have a, you know how when we have a prayer chain?
Mm-hmm.
If we could have something like that in a disaster sense.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, with the Slave Lake disaster, we did phone the conference. We had a telephone thing with ADRA over that. We did have that. How could we respond as a church?
Mm-hmm.
But in this last one, we did what we could in our area, but I didn't sense that we had.
Okay, quickly, because we're into overtime here now.
Try to be quick.
Do you know what? I wanted to address that because in my past, you know, I worked with airports as an air radio operator in the north. My husband was an air traffic controller. And in my experience, the answer to that is to have a pre-plan and practice it frequently. Because we as a people, we're pretty lucky. Nothing ever happens to us. When something big happens, we stand there with our mouths open because we don't have a clue what to do. And as we, you know, fly here and there, nobody expects an aircraft disaster. But all of a sudden, they happen. And the only way that we can handle those is to have a pre-plan and to practice it. And when it happens, when something happens, when I had an aircraft call down, mayday, mayday, you know what to do right away.
So this is obviously a topic. Do you have other classes of the next day,
and
so you can pick up on this in the next session?
Yeah, we have. Yeah, I'm gonna announce
it.
Okay. Yeah, we've talked. They know what's coming. It's the five modules remaining, and this is one of them.
Okay.
But we have some time on Friday to tie up loose ends and.
You got your sheet around. Okay, and also
yes.
The ones registering for tomorrow, have they all registered to go?
I'm going to have some announcements, but that's one of them.
Okay.
Okay, good. I know we're supposed to be in,
yeah,
so thank you.
I'll try to save your questions, and we can probably discuss some of these things. As I showed you yesterday on the PowerPoint, tomorrow is our class is meeting up at the Edmonton Warehouse.
Oh, okay.
And it's going to be from theory to practice, getting your hands. I understand Lyle says we're going to be sorting donations and things like that. So we're leaving at 7, as I mentioned, and we're coming back around 5:30 or 6. And so you must sign up at the office so you'll have a lunch, because you might get hungry sometime during the day, who knows. And is there any other questions on that aren't clear? It's just basically we're going to work, and who knows what we're going to do, but it could be sorting toothbrushes, or it could be doing heavier things.
Will there be other people besides our class?
I saw a list. I signed up my name last night, and I saw quite a long list. Yeah, people that will go besides us. So we're going to just strengthen the ranks and help out. And then this afternoon, Corrine Glover is going to have our finances. When we run a ministry in the community, we must be accountable. I mean, ADRA believes in accountability. They're being funded by governments and corporations and who knows what else.
And everybody in this
and
room
everybody
also.
Else, yeah. You know, so there must be in a careful accounting of finances and accountability. And so we're going to have a whole seminar on the importance of that. And again, for these remaining five modules, I've chosen people who are actually doing these things to do it. So Corrine is going to cover that subject this afternoon. And then tomorrow, of course, is our field trip. And then we have one remaining module on Friday morning, and Lynn McDowell is going to do the module on grant writing. And then that will wind up. And you've been so faithful. Between last year and this year, we will have covered 15 different modules of social ministry. And so thank you for your faithfulness. And is this somebody's pen, by the way? Anyway, in the sign-up sheet, somebody. Anyway, it's here if you need it. And
so are we here at 4?
Yes, I'm sorry. We'll be here at 4. We're not going to go to Heritage Church. Yes,
okay.
Yes. That was the, when we joined that class last two afternoons because it was directly related to our community services. It was just an expansion of what we did last year. But yes, here at 4 o'clock. And the name of that book, by the way, Nathan Brown is the...
Nathan Brown, that's it.
And Joanna Darby are the two editors. It's a Pacific Press book, and you just order it online. I have it slated to order right after this class. I've been meaning to do that. So, yes, it looks good. So I'm trying to think if there's anything else. I guess not. And if anybody didn't get a red notebook with all the notes for these five modules, there's a whole bunch over there. And if any, also I have these, if you didn't get this business card, using your business card as a witness and a way to clarify what the evidence movement is.
I have some here.
This is an example using my own business card. Okay, any other questions? Okay, well, we'll see you this afternoon at four o'clock. And thank you so much, James, for coming and giving us the Canada version. And that's what this curriculum is supposed to be. It's online, but it's there. You can manipulate it so the presenters that present it can adapt it to their situation. And so thank you for doing that. So let's have a prayer together before we leave. Dear Lord, we thank you so much for these wonderful people who for the last 2 years have been equipping themselves and to do the ministry of Jesus where they are located. So Lord, be with them through the rest of this day, and thank you so much for what Adra Canada is doing for James and his leadership and his team. Just continue to bless them as they deal with these fires and other issues that come their way, that they will totally reflect you in everything they do, so that others will be drawn to you, the healer. I pray in your name. Amen.
Amen.
Okay, we'll see you later.
May I have the little device, please?
Oh, whoa. We got all of that.